The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I'd like to talk a little bit this morning about the intention. And one way of understanding, or one of the functions of something like meditation practice, is to clarify and purify our intentions. Many people associate meditation, especially mindfulness, with getting insight or getting calm and getting some level of peace in one's life, maybe finding answers to one's life. But one of the very important things is to clarify or discover what our intentions are, what motivates us in our lives. And then to purify that, to refine it, to work on it, to study it, and kind of get down to the essence of it, or what's most important for us. And our intentions can be multiple. In fact, there can be multiple layers of intentions operating at the same time. And so I want to kind of tell you a story that adapts. Kind of a famous Zen story. In ancient China, there was a monk, sincere, dedicated monk, who decided to travel around China to visit great Zen monasteries, great teachers, in order to try to really get to the heart of the matter, really understand Buddhism and himself. And he had a great a bodhisattva vow. He had a great intention to do it because he wanted to not only discover the truth and maybe get enlightened, but what he really wanted to do was to do so in order to help others, to save other beings. And this really kind of became the organizing principle for his life, what his life was about. And he spent years wandering around practicing. And one day he was wandering around, going to the next monastery on his great quest out in the countryside and wilderness. And a lion, a tiger saw him, and the tiger gave chase. So he ran, and he came to an edge of a cliff. And behind him was a tiger, about to, you know, tigers do whatever tigers do. And the only option was to climb down the cliff. So he started climbing down the cliff. And then he looked down to the bottom of the cliff, and there was a second tiger waiting for him. And so above there was a tiger over the edge, big teeth, and snarling. And down below probably also, with the mouth wide open. And so he was holding on to a branch of a little tree or vine that was on the edge of the cliff, holding on for dear life. Can't go up, can't go down. And then he noticed that the vine was starting to break. And it's just a few seconds before it would break off. So at that moment, he looked into the cliffside on the cliff wall, and there was wild strawberries growing there. And he reached out in his free hand and plucked one of the strawberries and put it in his mouth. That's the end of the story. Leaving you to imagine what happened next. So here, you know, this monk had this great intention to practice Buddhism, to practice the truth. Great intention not only to do that, but to do it for him a deeper purpose, which was to benefit other people. And then here it was, clearly for him, the end of his life. There was no way out from apparently to die. What does he do? He just takes the moment and enjoys this moment fully. What happened to his kind of grand intention to save all beings at that moment? Shouldn't he have held on to that? Wasn't it kind of selfish at that last moment to just enjoy a strawberry when people around you are suffering? And I think you wouldn't blame him for taking a strawberry at that moment and feel like, well, there's people suffering. And And, you know, it actually seems like, in some ways, an inspired, brilliant thing to do. And just that moment, I mean, why get caught up in fear in your last moments? And that's a choice, right? To be caught up in fear and regrets and desperation and kind of have the last moments be somehow horrific. And so he chose to kind of let go of the future, the next few seconds, and just for this moment, and enjoy this moment in some pristine way. So these intentions he had, intentions to save all beings, and intention to just enjoy this moment here, are not necessarily in conflict with each other. They're just different contexts, different situations. Each one is appropriate for its time. I was thinking about this story because I went to visit a very old Zen teacher recently who is coming probably to the end of her life and needing to kind of address some of the some medical issues about what to do with herself, you know, whether to perpetuate her life under a care of medicine and a lot of, you know, medical equipment, or not to use medical intervention at this juncture of her life, and maybe by doing that, maybe die earlier. And she was wondering about the ethics of this, because for her, she asked me, what about my bodhisattva vow? She was, a Zen priest who had dedicated her life to practice for the welfare of all beings. And to overcome delusion and overcome attachments to desire, and so what about this? If she kind of doesn't do all the heavy medical interventions, would she somehow violate her great intention that she'd oriented her life to? And I thought it was quite beautiful that they, you know, to get this little window into wonderful Zen teachers, Buddhist teachers. Life and kind of the underlying foundation that kind of was behind her intentionality, what she was about, what she was doing, what her life was about. And someone who I've known for many years who had a wonderful capacity for just being really present for things. I was around her and saw her very beautiful care and attention to details of certain things, and she was right there for it, and she inspired many people because of how she just did her things, just this one thing, and putting her heart and attention and love into the things that she did. And so this, you know, both things were operating, that she had this ability to enter into the moment and be present, but in the bigger picture, her whole life was based on this great intention, wish to be a benefit to others. So there can be multiple layers of intentions at the same time going on in our lives. And this is important to understand, because sometimes when we discuss intentionality in Buddhism, people sometimes think, I'm only allowed to do, you know, have one intention. And some people think, like, in Buddhism, the only thing you're really allowed to do, is some schools of Buddhism, it's like you're not supposed to have any goal in practice. You know, if goal is a little bit diluted, yes, but especially in Zen sometimes they say no goal, practice with no goal. But to have an intention is to have a kind of goal. And but when you sit down to meditate and just really there with your breath, really with your body, you have to kind of put aside for that moment the intention to save all beings. Because if you start planning how to save all beings when you're sitting meditating, you're not really meditating. And so you don't get the benefits of that deep, you know, intimacy and connection to life that can happen in meditation. So in different contexts, there are different intentions that are operating. There's the larger intentions that we kind of organize our life around. And then there's the more particular intentions of the particular activities that we're doing in the moment. It has its own intention, its own context for doing something. So we explore intention. What's the right intention for the activity we're doing, and what's the right intention for the activity we're doing that's right for us, who we are, and what's the intention, the motivation that we want our life to be based on, and to spend time thinking about these things and reflecting on them. to have a clear sense of intentionality, what motivates us, is a source of energy, is a source of engagement. It kind of gives us fuel, it gives us a sense of purpose for what we're doing. It also becomes a kind of a ballast kind of a boat is what keeps the sailboat stable in the water. It doesn't kind of flip and flop too much. So to have a clear intention, you know what you're doing, your purpose of what you're doing, it makes a lot easier to go through life because everything, a lot of things that have to orient around that. And if it's a fundamental life intention, then you know, this is what I'm about. And there are people who make that decision and they let a lot of things have a clear intention. And there's a lot of conventional things that we think are important to do that they're willing to drop away, not be involved in. You know, maybe it's a little bit of a stereotype, but, you know, sometimes the starving artist, for example, or musician, you know, the intention is to express themselves in art and really do that. And they're willing to starve. They're willing to kind of sacrifice and put aside all kinds of welfare and other things that they want to do. Getting a good job and good homes or whatever, because they have this clear intention of what they want. Buddhist practitioners I've known have also been that way. I know people who said, this is what my life is going to be about. I'm going to dedicate myself to practice, and I'm not going to do some of the conventional things that's expected of people. And some people realize that there's some risk involved, you know, and maybe you won't have some of the security that many people expect or want in life. But, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And so some of you, and this is not good advertisement maybe, but for Buddhism, but I know a lot of Buddhists who have people and get interested in Buddhist practice and they become downwardly mobile. And so, you know, it's a little bit subversive, this Buddhism, which I'm kind of happy for. All these downwardly mobile people, or people who realize that they can be content with very little, because their intention, they have it clear. This is what my life is about, and I'm going to follow this through, and at the expense of many things that maybe sometimes are good to do. And then there's it also makes a lot of clarity sometimes about when you go through your life, how are you going to go through your life. So you might not still make the same big decisions what to do in terms of, I don't know, career or all kinds of activities you do. But there's a very clear sense that how I do it maybe is more important than what I do. And that how I do it is I want my life and how I do things to be a benefit to others. So I want to do it in such a way that it connects me to what's truth or connects me to compassion or care for the world. And that becomes a organizing principle for how we live our life. And that can give a lot of clarity and direction and a lot of confidence. Like, this is what I'm about. Boy, am I going to do this. I'm getting behind this. And this is one of the functions of ritual in Buddhism. There are some rituals that people do in Buddhism that are rituals of of intention, where we kind of get behind our intention. We acknowledge it fully. We kind of empower ourselves in it. We make it public or something, that this is what I'm going to do. And I think it can have a big impact on the psyche, on our psychology. That's one thing is to kind of go around and skip around your life. Oh, yeah, you know, I want to save people. I want to help people out. That's a good idea. Versus kind of, you know, with your community or other people have a ritual and say that in a kind of clear way, this is what I'm about. And then there's a kind of empowerment or strength around that. And it gives a directionality. It gives a to people. I was so one of the great things to do, I believe, is to reflect on what is your intention. So what's your intention in the particular things that you do? Many times we do things out of habit. Many times we're not clear about our intention of what we're doing. And sometimes if we become clear about our intentions, maybe we don't want to really do that. So one of the interesting reflections is when you're aware of why you're going to do something, what the motivation is for it. If you're really clear to yourself, how happy are you to admit that to others? This is great. I'm happy to admit it. As you spend more hours surfing the web, doing whatever it is you do, yeah, you know, this is a great thing. I'm so happy, and my intention is, whatever it might be. Sometimes the public kind of opening it up and considering how public your life is or how happy you are for other people to know what you're doing is a powerful mirror into ourselves, kind of a truth teller. If you're not really, if you're uncomfortable, other people know what you're doing, do you really want to do it? Does it really serve you? Does it really kind of help you to kind of lighten up and free up? And I spent a part of my life, I'm not saying it too grandiosely, I spent a period of some months, a year or something, when I was living at the San Francisco Zen Center, of making it a point that, making it a practice, that if anyone asked me anything about myself, that I would be an open book. I mean, I wasn't going around confessing everything. But if someone asked me, I would tell them. And then I got to see what I didn't want to. I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And that was a great kind of to see, you know, this, you know, my resistance. And when I kind of learned to kind of live in a way that I could be an open book, it felt so clean. It felt so nice. It felt kind of very helpful for me to do this. So why do you do things? Do you know why you do it? And how much of an open book are you willing to be? Now, sometimes it's not appropriate to be an open book, depending on the context. I'm not saying you should always do that, but you should, it's an interesting reflection about yourself to kind of use that as a litmus test. I spent a year of my life, at least, when I was living in the monastery, reflecting regularly about what did I want my life to be about? What was the intention for my life? And I had a number of different options. One of them was to go to graduate school and get a career and something. And the other option was, main option was to kind of go off and dedicate myself to Buddhist practice. And I didn't know which one was the appropriate one. And not only that, both of them involved wanting to help other people. But I didn't trust that wish. I thought, you know, people who want to help others, you know, it's probably not so sincere. You know, it's probably, you know, they're kind of self-serving or who knows. I didn't really trust the kind of that. So I had that wish, but so I was wondering, what should I do? And what do I want my life to be about? And can I trust myself in the intention that I have? And is it okay to have some of those intentions? Is it, you know, where is that going to take me in my life? And finally, I decided, or I would say it was decided for me, but it wasn't someone else decided. Something inside of me decided. There was a moment where I became completely clear that I knew the answer. It was like a turn in a moment. Something flipped inside, and now I knew. And what I knew was I was going to be ordained as a Zen monk. And for me, that meant dedicating my life to Buddhist practice and to use Buddhist practice as a vehicle to support and help other people. And the image back then, you know, I was going to be a monk. And there were, at the San Francisco Zen Center, there were a lot of monks. And so I calculated how many years, if I stayed there, it would take before I even attained the first level of kind of being a beginning teacher. And it was going to be 25 years because of the sequence, how it all worked out. But that was okay because I didn't really want to be a teacher. That wasn't the motivation. My idea was that I would somehow have this little urban Zen center, and I would have the key, and I would open it up and make sure that it was open so people would come meditate, and I would meditate with them. And that was my ambition. So it's kind of what happened here, but it's a little bit more complicated. And I'm talking to you. I didn't think I was going to talk to people. I thought I was going to meditate. Hope it's okay. So anyway, this idea of spending a long period of time really examining yourself and reflecting and thinking about it. And one of the things I learned is that by a sustained attention on intention is that you can go through layers. Some of the first answers that you come to are not necessarily the ones that, you know, the deepest ones, but we come to one and then you look more deeply and, you know, think about it more and reflect, and or you ask the question, well, if that's my motivation, why do I want to do that? You know, what's the intention, what's the motivation behind that? And then you get an answer maybe, and then ask again, what's the motivation behind that? And keep asking that question, going deeper and deeper. And then also to look at the nature of the answers you come up with. Are some of the answers compensatory, where you're compensating for some challenge that you have in your life? So like if you say, my intention is to live without fear. Well, that's a great intention, I like it that people want to do that. But then you could also ask the question, if I had no fear, what would be my life intention then? And then you might get a very different answer. I did that to someone once. They said they wanted to live without fear. I asked them to, what if they had no fear? What then? And then they said, oh, then I would like to live with love. And that kind of opened their eyes. Oh, why wait? And so, you know, what's the nature of your answer to that? You know, your deepest intention, is it compensatory or is it stated in negative terms? Sometimes that can be flipped around in positive terms, you get a different interesting answer. Sometimes you've stated in positive terms, like I want to live with love or care for the world, but then you flip it and make a negative statement from it. You know, what has to change in order for that to happen? That can also reveal something important. Oh, I guess I have a fair amount of fear. So I better work on the fear. The intention is to work on the fear and understand that. So to kind of keep massaging and looking at it. And many people, I think, are impatient. And many people kind of expect answers right away or solve their problems right away or something. But I think that when you're involved in something like Buddhist practice, spiritual practice, sometimes you need a lot of time to sort through these things. And my example is spending a year just in the monastery reflecting and thinking on this. I really needed that year, kind of going over and over and over again. And some of that time was not comfortable. I felt uncomfortable doing it. And we had, once every 5 days, we had a day off in the monastery. This is in the Tassajara, which is down in the Los Padres National Wilderness. It's a beautiful place. So on the days off, I'd go hiking often in the mountains there. And a beautiful place. But those days alone in the mountains were also the times I was most troubled. It was most difficult to be with myself. Because in the monastery, I was meditating and doing things and working, and I was distracted by the monastery activity. But when I had a day off, I wasn't distracted anymore. I was just kind of just with myself. It's a little odd, right? You think meditation's supposed to do that. But the days off did that for me. And so that year, it was kind of difficult, those hikes and walks, sort of thinking about myself and reflecting what to do, until it became clear, this is what I was going to do. So a great question to ask yourself when you want to do something, or say something, is to ask, for what purpose? What purpose are you doing this? And that can, you know, just ask that. Or if you have a good friend or someone, and say, you can please ask me this question periodically you think it might be useful for me. For what purpose are you doing this? And because sometimes it can kind of open in a new vista, a new understanding of what's happening in the moment. And then you see yourself in a deeper way. Part of my faith from my years of practice and working with people is that that the process of clarifying and purifying your intention is such a beautiful thing to do, such a worthwhile thing to do, that it's good to respect every intention we have. And what I mean by respect means, don't worry if your intention you think is a little bit off. My intention is to get back on my neighbor whose dog's always barking. I'm gonna get a boombox and and show them what sounds can be like. So that's sounds like not a very good intention to have, and so I'm not encouraging you to do that. But if you turn around your attention and respect that intention. Really respect it, meaning respect means literally to look again, look more deeply at it, make space for it, don't condemn yourself for it. And look, what's that about? For what purpose are you doing this? What's motivating you to want to do that? And if you kind of keep looking, behind your intentions, behind your motivations, there's other motivations, and there's other motivations. And if you keep looking, I think most often you'll come to something beautiful, something important. it might be that behind the intention to get a boombox to blast your neighbor is a wish to somehow assert your autonomy and dignity, and you feel like you're being so kind of, you know, you're kind of a little bit self-righteous and a little bit this person's disrespecting you. So you want to assert yourself, your dignity. And so, well, that's maybe an interesting thing to feel that. And then you could ask yourself, you know, well, is this the best way to do that? Are you really, is the result, you're going to get the result that you want? Is this going to lead you at the end of the day to feel greater sense of dignity in yourself? Like, boy, I got the biggest boombox in my block, and I really kind of blasted not only my immediate neighbor, but the whole block, and boy, am I great. I don't think so, right? And so you kind of say, oh, I'm looking for a kind of certain kind of personal dignity. Is there a different way of doing this? So that example was a two-step example. But sometimes you keep going and going deeper and deeper. A common one that I've seen in people is sometimes people are very critical of others, very judgmental of other people. And if you look at what motivates that, sometimes it's security, to make yourself kind of safe in the context. If you criticize someone else, then you're okay. And what's motivating that? Well, there's a kind of insecurity. What's behind your insecurity? A feeling of care for yourself. You want to take care of yourself, and so the motivation of love and care. But the idea of, you know, judging someone else negatively, you know, it's kind of a miss. It doesn't really work as a way of really caring for yourself, but it's kind of gone in a kind of dysfunctional way, right? But if you keep looking back and back, so it's part of my faith that if you keep plunging into your intentions and exploring it, respecting them all, don't condemn anything like this. If you keep looking and keep investigating, going deeper and deeper into it. There's a saying in Buddhism that goes, it all rests on the tip of your intention. So kind of the whole practice, your whole life rests or depends on your intention. It's also a saying that if you want to see the future, what the future is coming, look at your intention now. Because in Buddhism, the intentions you live in are the ones that really shape the future of your life in important ways. In the psychological ways of our life, the kind of what shapes our conditioning, what shapes our mind, are the intentions that we act on. And if we act on intentions of hostility or greed, if we act on constant self-protection or self-aggrandizement or all kinds of things, that shapes us in one way. If we act in generosity, if we act with love, with compassion, that shapes us in a different way. And so Buddhism says, don't underestimate how powerfully you are shaped by the intentions that you live by. This is the central message of the Buddhist teachings on karma. And so your intentions are maybe the most important resource you have. It's maybe kind of like from a Buddhist point of view, it's like the core, most important aspect of your life, more important than your bank account or, you know, who your friends are or all kinds of things. But your intention. So that's which is most intimate and makes the biggest difference. And if you want to care for yourself into the future, watch your intention. The Dalai Lama, as many of you are familiar with, is somewhat famous for saying, if you want to be happy, have compassion for others. And so here we have two intentions operating hand in hand. The intention to care for oneself, to be happy, and the intention to care for others, to have compassion. And maybe the two can't be separated so much. Maybe they can go hand in hand. And you know, you can't have real compassion for others if you don't really take care of yourself as well, if you don't care for yourself. Some people, you know, want to operate out of compassion, benefit other people, but then they're very critical of themselves. There's no compassion for themselves. So how do you cultivate both? Care for self, care for other, hand in hand. So what I'd like to end with is another question that you might carry with you in exploring intentionality, motivation, and that is kind of a thought exercise. Imagine yourself on your deathbed, and you're clear enough to think and be cognizant. and you look back over the past, back to today, May 24th, 2015. So what, if you look back over that period, what do you wish your life was about? What do you wish the motivation that drove your life, that informed your life, what would be most important to look back and appreciate about yourself? Is it that, would it be that you regret not seeing more TV? You know, there were more websites to visit. If only. I don't think so. What do you want to, so what, if you look back at yourself in that period, like from today into your deathbed, what do you want, you know, if you, what would make you, what would feel good for you? What motivation, what intention, what sense of purpose that you really want your life to be about? And I hope that this kind of reflection doesn't weigh you down. That's not the intention with duty and obligation. You have to now get serious. But rather that it helps lighten you and free you and not take things so personally, and but really to realize that there is this great, beautiful thing inside that you can choose carefully so that it does lighten you, it does free you, it does kind of make you sit up taller and stronger and be more inspired and happy with your life. Intention can do all those things if you're careful with your intention. I hope your intention enhances your life and brings much joy to you and many people. So, in about, we have about 10 minutes left before we end. And I think rather than taking some questions, I think it might be interesting for you to kind of turn to, maybe have little groups of four, turn to people next to you, and share with people in your group whatever you'd like to. You don't have to say things you don't want to say, but what kind of response you had to this talk? What? And the most useful way, I think, you can say anything you want, but in what way were you usefully challenged by this talk? Or what kind of useful reflections came out of this exploration of intentionality? So thank you. I didn't want to interrupt you. There was so much energy and engagement. So you're welcome to stay and continue for a long time. But so I'd like to offer one last word around this idea of intention. There is another word that's related to the words of intention that I think is kind of a synonym, but also I think it points to something maybe even more profound than the word intention points to. Maybe something of the heart or something. And that is the word dedication. So rather than asking what is your life intention, what is your life dedication? What are you dedicated to? And then, if you know what your life is dedicated to, can you let go into that dedication? Let go into it so that you can live from that sense of dedication. So thank you all, and please continue talking if you'd like.